Hey, One Song listeners, Luxury here. I'm so excited for you to listen to this week's episode. It's a deep dive into the Bad Boy remix of Mariah Carey's Fantasy, featuring an iconic cameo by Old Dirty Bastard. For this episode, Diallo and I were joined by a special guest, singer Durand Bernard. And we had such a great time talking about Fantasy with Durand that I realized we didn't really give him a proper introduction, so let's do that now. You might have heard Durand in one of his collabs with Catronata, Anderson .Paak, or Thundercat. Or maybe you saw him live on stage with Erykah Badu, since he sings in her touring band. Or maybe you saw his incredible performance as a solo artist on NPR's Tiny Desk. That is Durand Bernard, and this is One Song.
Shout out to US Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this episode of One Song, and for giving our podcast studio an unbelievably smooth, sustainable makeover. Here on our show, we dive deep into the music, dissecting every beat and lyric. Sustainability is just like that. Each eco-friendly choice we make is like a single note that contributes to life's melody. That's why Heartbeat and the USB are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets. To see our sustainable studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
My shining star is One Song in the house. Los Angeles in the house. New York, are you in the house? A seemingly random collection of geographical locations. Also in the house. Japan, are you in the house? Sacramento, are you in the house? Atlanta, Georgia, are you in the house? I'm glad he said Atlanta, Georgia, because we may not have known which Atlanta he was talking about. Baby, baby, come on, start one song, start one song. We got Luxury in the house. We got Durand in the house. And we got Mariah Carey and the Old Dirty Doggy in the house. And we'll see how this goes. This is One Song. Now that we've established that everyone is in the house, it's time on One Song to talk about a pop masterpiece, a collision of two worlds. You have the pop princess of the 90s. You know, we already know who this person is. But then we put her with Staten Island's grimiest MC, one of the first stars out of the Wu-Tang Clan. And we've got a song powered by, you know, one of the greatest hooks in, you know, history. It's like a song that, like, if you were a certain age, you heard it on the radio, you seen it on the TV show. I'm going to stop using hip-hop references, and I'm going to talk about this song. The song is called Fantasy, the Bad Boy remix, featuring Mariah Carey and Old Dirty Bastard. This is Fantasy, and this is One Song. The way her voice so comes bad. In, it always reminds me of being a DJ, because as a DJ, when that vocal comes in, like, Old Dirty always got the party hype, but when her vocal came in all pristine and perfect, like, it just sounded different coming out of those speakers. It always got the party hype, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Luxury, tell us what we're talking about.
Well, first of all, Durand, welcome to the show, my friend. It's nice to see you. I'm glad to to have you in particular as a guest for this episode. I think it's a perfect match. And I actually got a quick question. You were just humming the intro right there. How many voices, have you ever counted how many different voices and characters and registers and ranges? Mariah's going a lot of places on this song. Like what, from the singer's perspective, since you are yourself an incredible singer, when you hear it, does it sound complicated? What does it sound like to you? What are your feelings as a fellow singer when you hear this song?
Mm.
That's a big question, I know.
Yes. First of all, it's good to be seen and not viewed. Not right now.
It might be a little
bit of
both. Just
know, right?
There might be some stuff on Instagram.
That part. And listening now as an adult, Mariah is the female Luther with a whistle register.
Wow.
Like when you That's really amazing. Listen to their choices and how they approach things, it feels it's a lighter texture. Mm. You know, his was velvety, hers is lighter. And so that gives a different contrast to it. Now I've always appreciated her voice.
I like what you're saying because there are some people have gratuitous runs. We won't need to name
Come
the
on,
names.
Gratuitous.
Gratuitous runs. But name of a great album, by the way. But but she doesn't. Like she really feels like she's like feeling everything. And I had never thought of it before. I can see the connection to Luther. That's deep.
She has also said that she sings her songs the way that she does because she didn't want anyone else to sing them.
Oh yeah, it's impossible.
Wow. Yeah. I've worked with some singers and it's amazing to me how the degree to which, whether they say it or not, they are trying to make every song their own. They're like, I don't want anybody else to be able to sing this. I feel like it goes back to Stevie. I feel like nobody, it's hard to cover Stevie, you know? Mm-hmm. There is so much that I really want us to get into, but I don't want us to get too far off the beaten path. So Luxury.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to know, Durand, as our guest, what is it about this song that means so much to you? And do you have any sort of stories like the first time you heard it? Like, is there a connection you feel to Fantasy?
Because this song came out in 95.
The 95 song.
95. I know for sure because, okay, growing up, my mother didn't play a lot of, you know, secular music, you know, so it was a lot of jazz and gospel and whatnot, and a little bit of new age in there, you know, that Enya, that shit that you play in yoga class, you know, we could listen to that. But there were some artists that I was able to sneak into the house, you know, like Janet Jackson was contraband. Waiting to exhale, that was contraband, you know, but Mariah would get played on the jazz station. So Mariah was actually cool. So I could listen to Mariah and Whitney and Michael Jackson, you know, so.
I feel like Visions of Love was like a big song for Mariah, like early on. Like,
see, mine was Can't Let Go. I can't speak for Visions of Love. I mean, that's
really?
A great song, but no, Can't Let Go, oh, baby. And when you, just. I need AI to do a Luther, whatchamacallit, you know, swap on that song so you can hear what it would sound like.
Oh, Luther, we're singing.
Him singing Don't Let, him singing Can't Let Go. You'll be like, ah, that's where it is.
I mean, right now, that's the sound of everybody who's listening to this doing exactly that.
Diallo, please set the scene for us, if you will. This song is released. It's 1995. Where are you? Where is Diallo Riddle in 1995? And what do you think of Mariah at the time?
I'm glad you bring it up. I was in college and, you know, that's like a time when you're in college, like nobody can tell you anything about music. If you like music, you feel like, you know, just enough of what happened in the past, but you're like right in the zeitgeist. You know exactly what's going on in the culture. And
you got your identity too.
You got your identity.
Tribal identity.
I was firmly implanted in hip hop by this point, you know, growing up, I would like, you know, Michael Jackson and the Pet Shop Boys. But like at this time, like, I was 100% in hip hop, and 1995, like Mariah is cool. You know what I mean? Like nowadays my wife is like, you know, she's of the perfect age where like Mariah is like her Michael Jackson, Madonna, just given the age. And so like, she likes, you know, some of those Mariah Carey songs that I'm like, ugh. Like, you know, like, cause to me, that's not what I was trying to hear. Like I was about Mary. I was about faith. Mm-hmm. I was about like, you know, there were R&B, you know, queens at that time that like, you know, you just were impeachable. And I think the most interesting thing about this song that we're talking about today is that when it came out, it was like, wait a second, she's got a song with Old Dirty Bastard? Like, it was, you know, I always say Mary and Meth with You're All I Need was like, That was like one of the first ones. It won a Grammy. Like, it was like, oh, this. When SWV did the remix of Anything with Wu-Tang, like, we were like, yo, anything is possible now.
So this is the crossover moment between R&B, pop, and hip-hop. This is like when it was like,
wait, even Mariah is, and apparently her, you know, her husband at the time, Tommy Mottola, runs the record label, and he's not happy about this. He's like, you're throwing away all of the pop princess, you know, branding, if you will.
He's scared.
Was, yeah, he's like, there's no way this could work.
Yeah.
But it was Mariah's idea. She was like, I want to do a song with Old Dirty Bastard. In her words, he reminds me of the uncle who's drunk at the barbecue.
I love that. Oh, drunk uncle returns to the show.
We always bring up these drunk uncles.
Ooh, yes.
And so she was like, I really want it to be him. So it's interesting also from let's get really granular on this. This is a time when, according to Nas, Wu-Tang and Bad Boy have beef because Wu-Tang feel like they represent where East Coast hip-hop and New York hip-hop is, and they feel like Puffy is ruining it with, you know, all the Versace shades and talking about
that connection. I was curious about that. I was hoping you'd explain that to
me. Wu-Tang, Staten Island, grimy, and here comes, you know, Puffy. Like, I mean, by, you know, 1995, is a seminal year. We talked about this on the show before. It's a very important year in terms of hip hop. It's the year that the One More Chance remix by Biggie samples DeBarge.
First things first, I pop freaks all the honey, dummies, playboy bunnies, those wanting money, those the ones I like because they don't get
money. And suddenly black radio stations that never played hip hop before, they were always R&B in the day, and they might play hip-hop at night. All of a sudden, during the daytime, they're playing Baby One More Chance. You know, like, it changes overnight.
That's a sound that wouldn't normally have been on there.
That Junior Mafia album came out. Like, everything is changing, like, really rapidly, you know, during this time. And so 1995, Mariah does a song with Old Dirty Bastard, and we're going to get into the shenanigans that take place in both the recording and the music video. But this was big. This was big because it showed how much not just R&B, but now pop is now going to basically be singing over hip hop.
Yeah.
In ways that it hadn't been before. But let's start by building the song from the ground up. Now, Mariah herself picked this sample, Genius of Love by Tom Tom Club, and let's hear a little bit of it. Here's what Mariah said about her use of that sample. I was listening to the radio and heard Genius of Love, and I hadn't heard it in a long time. It reminded me of growing up and listening to the radio, and that feeling the song gave me seemed to go with the melody and basic idea that I had for Fantasy. I initially told Dave about the idea, and we did it. We called up the Tom Tom Club, because, you know, they were, like, listed. And they were really into it. By the way, the Dave that she's referring to is her producer, Dave Hall, who worked on records with a lot of artists, including Mary J. Blige and Madonna. And here is how that Tom Tom sample, Tom Tom Club sample, sounds in the song.
Sorry. I just laugh sometimes because there's so much going on there vocally. There's like 50 different ideas, but it works somehow. Like, there's da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then there's like maybe literally three different lines happening at once in a different way. It just made me laugh in that.
It's very charged. When you have like the
the counterpoint.
It's all the different things. The top notes is doing something different from the main note, and then they kind of come together at the end to kind of add this lush kind of cascade of different.
But it reminds me of the Stevie Wonder, what we talked about with the clavinets, because like we did an episode about Stevie Wonder Superstition, and when you isolate the clavinets, there's like four different ideas on eight different tracks, and they're all doing different things, but they're finding different syncopated pockets and different notes. And that's why it works in the mix. And there's kind of an interesting parallel here, too, because each of those singers is singing a different note with a different rhythm, a different lyric. Anyway, it's and in the mix, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just love the idea of Mariah Carey being in a car listening to the radio, hearing a song she likes. She's like, oh, that's cool. Let's call it the Tom Tom Club.
Okay, right.
that's called access.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Duran, you write a lot of songs. Luxury writes a lot of songs. I've written some songs. Can you remember having a eureka moment like that when you heard something and it completely inspired you to write then?
Oh, when was the last time?
You got to race home and just, or jot it in your phone or something away.
I'm always jotting things in my phone. I'm always having, you know, my voice notes.
Do you do the voice memos?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so it's just.
Try not to look crazy when you're walking down the street.
Yeah. Please. Like, I got to get it out, even if I'm saying it quietly, to, you know.
Do you get melodies, lyrics, or both at once? Is it usually one, or does it change all the time?
It depends. Yeah. You know, it could be a one-liner that I said or that I heard, you know, in a way. Or it could be a melody that I have for something that I don't even have a home for yet. I just know I like the construct of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's very clear is that Fantasy by Mariah Carey, like, there are two popular versions of this song, and until we just played that other one, I had totally forgotten that there was one other than the Old Dirty, because I only really messed around with.
Well, we got to talk about the backstory of how we even came to this episode, because we were talking about Mariah and trying to choose what Mariah song should we do, and Fantasy came up pretty quickly. But when we were talking about it, like, I'm raising my hand. Like, I, first to admit, I did not know of the existence of the remix.
Baby, baby, come on, baby, come on, baby, come on.
When you walk by every night, talking sweet and looking fine, I get kind of hectic inside.
That's crazy to me.
I had never heard it. And Diallo,
because we're
it's not that he had never heard the original, but it's like we absolutely had two different worlds.
I had roundly avoided it.
Wow!
But no, it's crazy, because to me, like, this is one of those songs. It's like, This Is How We Do It by Montel Jordan. Like, again, maybe it's because as a DJ, I feel like it's been there.
Does he have a remix to This Is How We Do It that we don't
there,
know?
There actually is. There actually is, but it didn't take off like the one that everybody.
Okay, because I'm like, there's just a lot of information.
The remix of This Is How We Did It. The remix is called This Is How We Did It. Takes place in the past.
It's called If I Did It.
I want to say it samples Zapp and Roger, like,
that's Cutie Pie.
Oh, is that Cutie Pie? Ironic that it comes back to Cutie Pie every time.
You're the girl. Makes me feel so good.
Dude, I'm telling you, This Is How We Do It. Boom, ba-dum, boom, ba-dum. I'm pretty sure it samples Cutie Pie by Two Way. And if it does, here's a snippet.
This is how we do it.
Ooh, South Central does it like nobody does.
This is how we do it.
To all my neighbors, you got much flavor.
This is how we do it.
By the way, that's one thing I love about 90s hip-hop is that there was always a remix. And a lot of the times, the remix was a completely different song.
New vocals.
Yep.
New vocals. Oh, by the way, this might be the best place for me to bring this up. I want to talk about my favorite Old Dirty Bastard song of all time. It is the radio edit of Brooklyn Zoo. Because as opposed to nowadays when, like, you just drop out the curse words, and even my kids are like, man, they're cursing a lot. Because this is essentially like, you know, whole verses go away and stuff like that. In the early to probably mid-90s, there was a lot of just re-recording clean lyrics. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the first where I really noticed that, oh, you know, sometimes the clean version is better is Deep Cover. Because Snoop on the dirty version is like, I got a gauge and Uzi and my motherfucking 22. But on the edit, he's like, I got a gauge and Uzi and my nickel plated 22. And I was, as a writer, I was like, ooh, nickel plated 22? Like, it was more there was more imagery that was forming in my brain.
But it was an improvement.
Old Dirty Bastard takes the cake. He takes the cake when it comes to coming up with completely different lyrics. I'm gonna play you a snippet. And really, if you get a second, just go on YouTube or wherever you can find Brooklyn Zoo clean edit. The whole song is like this. If you play the dirty version first and then the clean version, it's a completely different song. Some of the best ad-libs in history. I'm just going to play a snippet. Here it goes.
Who couldn't figure your button? Who couldn't figure your button? Who couldn't figure how to pull a gun trigger? Get out of here!
God.
That is a sampling. There are so many sound effects. There are so many places where he just changes the lyric. Like that one part, I think he says, like, without a fucking gun trigger, you crazy nigga. Instead of that, he goes, without pulling a gun trigger, get out of here. Like, he screams, get out of here. And I just feel like has some stuff that you would never come up with.
A better choice, frankly.
It's a better song. Yeah. It's a better song. It's like, I know one time, probably around 2000, so the song was old, but it wasn't like old. Around 2000, the DJ put this version on, and everybody had a better time because we all knew the ad-lib / sound effects. Like, it was just, you know, it was pandemonium. It was just like that extra little bit of creative.
It was Wile E. Coyote building shit in the song. Like, he brought Looney Tunes.
He brought the Acme.
He brought the Acme box. Yes.
I always say someone needs to move Funkmaster Flex away from that bomb factory that they're building next to this place. We love Funkmaster Flex on the show because nobody can, you know, extend one play of one song over 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Over 23 minutes, just starting it over and putting on bomb.
And you stay tuned the whole time. You just can't wait for it to actually get in there. So, Diallo, break it down for me. What did this Bad Boy remix featuring ODB, what did this remix mean to hip hop? How did it change things?
I mean, again, I feel like I was immersed in the scene, both as like a DJ and an active listener. I was buying all the mixtapes. And I do think that, you know, this was one of the times where we realized hip hop wasn't just taking over R&B, it was taking over pop. And I feel like for the next 10 to 15 years, almost all pop and definitely R&B, it was so heavily hip-hop influenced that it was hard to figure out where hip-hop ended and where R&B began or where pop began. You know what I mean? Like, so I remember especially like when everybody really started singing, like, you know, like when Drake started like to really do his thing, like by 2009, it was like, man, is it hip hop if they don't rap one verse? You know, if it's just all singing, like,
right? Does it even count as hip hop?
Yeah, I mean, like the first time I noticed, like people were calling, you know, like some of the greats. I'm talking about Lauryn Hill, Miss Education. You know, like there's some songs on there where she doesn't really, you know, rhyme a verse. Like she sings, you know, the entire song. So I feel like we had already been heading in that direction, but definitely for the next 10 or 15 years, like that's all that we were, until pop sort of became kind of where it currently lives, which I always say, like, right now, most pop singers, like the Dua Lipas, they're singing over what is essentially EDM music.
They're singing
over, like, you know, if you took their vocals off and you put
a
few more techno flares in there, it would be a straight-up dance track. But, you know, for quite some time, at least from 95 until 2010, you could make the argument that hip-hop was, for lack of a better term, pop. All, you know, hip hop had all the biggest artists, you know,
right,
from Ludacris to T.I., Missy Elliott. We were definitely driving that culture for a long time. And I do feel like, as many people have noticed, that has changed. You know, like now, you know, a lot of what is hip hop, with the exception of, ironically, of the women, you know, I think that, you know, if you were to ask who are the big male hip hop stars, like, they're not the household names the way that they were. You know, now it's mainly about, you know, the Cardis, the Megans, you know, Saweetie, Ice Spice. But there was a time when, you know, hip hop was running things. And I feel like this was a point where hip hop and pop really merged in a way that it, you know, now it almost seemed passe. Like, you know, no heads would turn if, you know, I mean, Dua Lipa literally did a song with DaBaby. So, I mean, like, and nobody cared, you know, they judged it on the merits of the song. But like the time when, like, you could take a pop princess and put it with a hip hop person, that seems very passe. Now, Duran, what do you think about sort of hip hop's path from sort of, you know, underground New York, early 90s through the next 15 years?
It would be nice if we can get back to having singers sing the hook.
Mm-hmm. You mean you don't want Master P's cousin singing the hook?
It's just, I mean, just it's, as long as they can sing. Like, and when you brought up Lauren, when you were saying that sometimes she would just sing, or she could sing the hook, or she could, because she was an actual singer.
Yeah.
So it and she complimented herself from both sides.
Exactly.
So a lot of times you just got the homies just slapping the the auto-tune on there, and it's like, man, if you don't get a singer in here and do this hook, unless of course it's T-Pain or the
Who
Dream.
Who is a great singer.
And I gotta say, because y'all gonna put some respect on Teddy's name. His arrangements, like I said, him and the Dream.
Mm-hmm. The Dream.
They might not be strong vocalists. That's not what is always needed. Sometimes it's just the approach. It's the ability to color the song in such a way, you know, and then how you're telling your story. So
the rap singers of 2006 and 7 and 8, you mentioned The Dream, you mentioned T-Pain. That was a really fun time.
It was.
I mean, I was a grown up. I was a grown man when those songs were coming out, but even I was like, this teeny bop sort of like this hip hop, like, you know, the part of me that grew up with De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest and you know, Mobb Deep, and like, you know, I was very New York focused, you know, in the 90s, but even I just understood, I understood a catchy, infectious, just quality song. You know what I mean?
See, we had Bone Thugs and Harmony.
I was going to ask you about
that. So, and
East 99.
East 99, St. Cloud. I grew up on 93rd.
Oh, St. Clair. So yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yes, no, Cleveland proper. And what's cool about just listening to Bone Thugs, not only were they the hip hop temptation.
Perfectly put.
But then when you listen to Destiny's Children, they're the female Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Oh, you got it.
Cramming all them words in the, well, no, you want me. I can see it in your eyes.
But I, you keep on what you say.
Like, you know, cater to you. I would have hated to sing background on that song. Like, so many words.
Baby, I'm happy at home. Let me hold you in my arms. I just want to take the stress away from you. Making sure that I'm doing my part. Boy, is there something you need me to do?
I don't think anybody's ever connected.
I never thought about
Beyonce
that.
And Kelly to Busy.
I don't think I've ever seen that before. They was baby. Oh yes, Bugaboo and Bills, all that, and then listen to Bone Thugs.
Mm.
Oh yeah,
wow! It's, you heard it here first, y'all.
It's all interchanged. Like,
Destiny's
Child
was basically the female Bone Thugs. I love that. I love that. On this show, we like to draw connections that people don't see. That is a connection I have never thought about ever once.
Hey, One Song listeners, Luxury here. So Diallo and I had such a great time talking to Duran about Mariah, ODB, the connection between Bone Thugs and Harmony and Destiny's Child and all that cool stuff, that there were a few things that I didn't quite get to when we recorded the show. So let's take a little detour from the conversation and make sure we cover some of the incredible connections, samples, and yes, interpolations that make this episode's One Song what it is. Okay, so there's a really cool chain of connections that Mariah Carey's Fantasy ODB remix is a part of. So as I walk you through all of them, here's something to think about. Some of these are remixes, some of them are original, and where the line is between original and remix is not always super obvious musically, but financially it is very significant. So let's start with the original. This is Mariah Carey, Fantasy from 1995. The song relies very, very, very heavily on a two-bar looped sample of this. That's Genius of Love by the Tom Tom Club, Tina Weymouth and Chris Franz, aka the married couple rhythm section from Talking Heads. The music bed of Fantasy is essentially just that sample plus a few additional synths that were added by producer or co-writer Dave Jam Hall, like this Dr. Dre-like Moog melody. And maybe they figured, hey, look, we're already paying Tom Tom Club for that music sample. Why don't we just go ahead and use some of the vocals too? So they added this interpolation. Fantasy fully credited and paid for the use of the Tom Tom Club song. So both Weymouth and Franz and their producer Stephen Stanley have songwriting credit on Fantasy. And by the way, Genius of Love is not exactly a deep cut. It's been sampled and interpolated left and right with over 100 samples and interpolations, such as this. We're the kings of swing. We're chosen to rule. The themes of clean inside the cool school. So that one's a replay, aka interpolation, by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, while this classic from Mark Morrison samples the beat with its iconic and instantly recognizable clap. That clap is so iconic, by the way. Chris Franz tells the story that Genius of Love came out and was a massive hit. It was the beginning of the fracturing of Talking Heads. And apparently David Byrne was having a hard time being happy for Chris and Tina's success with their side project. So one time they were out together and the song came on, and it was a little bit of an awkward moan, apparently. And the only thing Byrne could muster to say kindly about it was, "How'd you get that clap sound?" Anyway, getting back to Fantasy, the Bad Boy ODB remix by Puff Daddy and Bad Boy Hitmen member Nasheem Myrick uses a different sample of that same Tom Tom Club song. And, of course, adds vocals from ODB. But neither Puff nor ODB get any writing credits. They were just paid a flat fee. In ODB's case, it was apparently something like $15,000 originally to rap on the track, but that became $30,000 when he was called back to add a few more cities for that intro. And he was paid $15,000 more to be in the video. So all told, ODB got $45,000 to participate in the ODB remix. But that's it. No publishing, no royalties. It's treated like a remix. Now hold on to that fact, because it's going to be important a little bit later. Meanwhile, there's actually another Fantasy remix. There's actually a few, but I'm going to focus on this one, which is more of a traditional house music, four on the floor type remix. And it's by David Morales, and it's called the Daydream Interlude Fantasy Sweet Dub Mix. And here it is. Now, what's unusual here is that Mariah completely re-recorded her vocals. Producer David Morales came up with a completely new melody, rhythm, chords, everything. There's really just a little lyrical fragment of the original version of Fantasy. Like, if you didn't really know that it was called Fantasy Remix, you wouldn't necessarily connect the two songs. And yet, the Tom Tom Club get full credits on this one as well, even though no part of Genius of Love is being sampled or interpolated. Furthermore, Morales, the producer, who essentially co-wrote a completely new song, didn't get any writing credit and presumably was just given a remix and or producer fee, as was standard at the time. Okay, so are you with me so far? We've got the Tom Tom Club sample source song, Genius of Love. Then we have the original Mariah Carey version of Fantasy. We've now got two Mariah Carey remixes. And Tom Tom Club are getting paid off of all of these. So let's leap a quarter century into the future. It's 2021 now, and we've got this. Yeah, bitch, I could be a fantasy. I could tell you got big, big energy. So what exactly is Lotto's 2021 song, Big Energy? Is it a remix? Is it a cover? Is it an original? Are those samples? Are they perhaps interpolations? Well, if you guessed the latter, you're right, because the Tom Tom Club song Genius of Love is not sampled, it's interpolated, it's a replay. However, they're already getting paid right there, because interpolations are going to get you writing credit. And to answer the question, it's a new song, it's not considered a cover or a remix, but we're not quite done. We've got one more link in this chain, and it's this. You gon' have to come and see this. Pretty like Nunu, sweet like peaches. I'ma be a fantasy, you ain't gon' believe this. Mariah Carey herself hopped on the remix to Big Energy by Lotto, with her trademark whistle register, of course. This the remix. And she essentially adds a reprise of much of the song Fantasy, stopping just short of singing Fantasy. So, what is this song? Is it a real remix? Is it a feature? Is it a shared cover? What's interesting is that technically this one, this remix, is called a remix, by the way, Big Energy Remix, is treated like an original song. Meaning, unlike the ODB remix and unlike the David Morales remix, remember when neither they nor Puff nor anyone involved in the Fantasy remixes got any kind of publishing or writing credit? In this case, Mariah and Fantasy producer Dave Hall are actually included as writers on Lotto's remix. Not the original, not Big Energy, but the remix. I know, it's a lot to process. The reason why it's important is because Mariah obviously has a great deal of power, presumably far more than ODB had in 1995, and she was able to add herself as a writer on this remix, making it actually an original. So if you've been paying attention this whole time, you can probably predict who else gets writing credit on this and everything else that you've just heard. That's right. It's the Tom Tom Club. They're getting paid on all six of these links in the chain that we just went through, not to mention the 100+ interpolations and samples. So good on them. Go Tina and Chris. Get that back.
After the break, we'll be back with more on this song, and we will talk about her collaborator on this song. I'm talking about Ason Unique, Dirtiest Man Alive, Dirt McGirt, DJ Cooley Hot, Joe Bananas, The Specialist, Dirt Dog, Osiris, Osiris, Dirty McDurster, Big Baby Jesus himself, the old Dirty Doggy. I had to say it like that because that's how he says it on this song, okay. Presumably for radio. He's just, to his friends, old Dirty Bastard, and we're going to talk about that.
Russell.
After the break. Well, he's Russell Jones to his mom, but he's ODB, and we'll be right back. Thanks to the U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Just like notes in a song, sustainable living is just a series of small, eco-friendly choices that contribute to the melody. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on At Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to One Song. Now, I want to change things up a little bit. I want to tell a story, the story of how old Dirty Bastard got on this track and how he worked on this track. Now, the recording of Fantasy, like we said, record label wasn't happy with it. Tommy Mottola, her husband at the time, not happy about it. But Mariah was like, I want to do this song specifically with my drunk uncle, old Dirty Bastard. And true to form, they set up some record time. And old Dirty Bastard showed up 3 hours late and apparently had been drinking all day.
Oh, gosh. I was going to ask if he was inebriated for real.
He was not sober.
Your instincts were right on this.
He showed up, and one of the first things he said was he needed Moet and Newports. And it was apparently, because he was 3 hours late, it's around midnight. You know, this is, I feel like in New York now, you can find Moet and Newports at midnight. But maybe in 1995... that wasn't a thing. So they tell the interns, who I guess are all white, to go get him Moet and Newport. So it's like, we probably can't find that. He tells them that they are, he said, y'all some white devils. Y'all don't want black people to have shit. So the white devils went to go get Moet and Newport. They searched for an hour. They came back with Heinekens. He was irate. I got to say, if I'm old Dirty Bastard, I'm kind of team old Dirty Bastard on that. Like, Heineken is not Newport, you guys. He apparently took the Newport. I mean, he took the Heinekens. we'll never find out if they found the Newports. He took the Heineken. He smashed it on the ground. He was like, all right, let's work. He records the famous line, me and Mariah go back like babies and pacifiers, which is just an amazing lyric for any song, but he accomplished that line. Should we hear that line from the song? All right, here we go.
Dirty, yeah. Doggy, here we go now. Me and Mariah go back like babies with pacifiers. Right.
And that was it. He recorded that line, and he's like, I need to sleep. He lays down and goes to sleep, apparently for a whole hour. Everybody's just sitting around waiting him for, you know, to wake up and do some more. Old Dirty gets up. He records the next line. Old Dirty Dog, no liar. Keep your fantasy hot like fire. And then went back to sleep for another 45 minutes. At some point in the evening, he tells the engineer, he's like, hey, I hope you got your shit set right because I ain't doing it twice. I have a theory about that. I have a theory he wasn't actually talking to the engineer. I think that was his next verse. Make sure you got your shit set right because I ain't doing it twice. It almost rhymes too much. I think he was
should have kept that.
I think he was still rhyming. They should have put it in.
Some bars.
He goes to sleep again. This time, apparently, he kicked off one shoe and the whole studio smelled terrible. There was some other stuff that he might have done. I'm not going to go into it. You can find the story online. I don't want y'all to tune out. But, like, it's a mess. And, by the way, the whole time, Tommy Mottola and Mariah are calling every hour on the hour asking, how's it going? Like, is it going well? Like, what are you recording? So it took them all night to record that one verse. And if you listen to it, you hear that his voice feels very punched in. Like, it's not like one continuous take. Like, there's a reason why. Like, even some lines, like, I'm a little bit country.
I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock. I don't stole the soul. Big letters all big and
if you listen to that part in particular, like, the lyrics are, like, lapped over each other. Not for effect, but just because they just didn't line up.
Just one idea at a time.
Yeah, it was just one idea at a
one
time.
One and done.
But you know, when you write, me and Mariah go back like baby and fast.
You can take
like,
a nap. You
listen,
take a nap.
Listen.
Long nap.
He might have known in his brain, you know what? This is good enough to be a part of hip hop history.
Yeah.
So he leaves the studio. They finally play the track for Mariah and Tommy Mottola. And this story doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. They loved it. From the first time they heard it, they knew they had a hit. So they said, hey, that was really good. Can you get Old Dirty Bastard to come back and add more cities? We like when he said New York is in the house. The engineers are like, no, I don't know if you know this, but like he's going to charge us the same amount all over, like $15,000, which is a lot of money back in 1995, but maybe not that much for a Mariah Carey song. But they're like, no, we need more cities. We need more towns. Like, we love that part. So he gets another 15 grand to come back. Mm. Shout out to Corey Summers, by the way, the guy who told this story, because he was there that night. He came back and he added more cities. That's when he adds Japan, because if it sounds like he's just making it, he's just throwing out places.
Sacramento in the house. Atlanta, Georgia, are you in the house? West Coast, are you in the house? Japan, are you in the house? Everybody, are you in the house?
Well, there's a reason for that because, you know, he's just in the studio. And by the way, when he came back to record those other places, he was apparently like hungover and tired. So he didn't fall to sleep a bunch of times, but you're working with an even more grumpy Old Dirty Bastard. So that to me is part of the genius of Old Dirty. Like, you know, you hear about Hank Williams, you know, when you hear about country, you hear about, oh, they had to give Keith Richards a whole new set of blood because his blood was so tainted. Like, they had to get, like, these are stories told about other people, but I feel like we don't know all the stories about our friends in hip hop in the same way. And to me, this story is like, I don't know if I want to be there that night, but I'm happy that it happened. I'm happy that a man could be so free as to insult the interns, smash a bottle of beer on the make people wait while he sleeps, subject them to smells, and then take all night to record one of the shortest verses, I think, on a feature that you're ever going to come across. But you know what? It worked for him. It worked for Old Dirty. I mean, like, I don't know. Is there a part of you as an artist who I'm not... You seem like a very good individual, but is there a part of you that secretly likes to like would love to be just unhinged for once?
I am unhinged, but I'm not unhinged in a way, at least to my experience from myself, because I have to live with myself, but also the people around me, you know, that are not yes men. Yeah. I can be unhinged with my transparency and my honesty.
Yes.
But it's never to, like, truly hurt somebody's feelings. No. Like, I'm a jokester. You know, if I can find some areas where we can joke and throw a little read in there, like that's cute.
But you're not hurting anybody. This is all playful.
No, and I think that listen, the people here at One Song, we do not promote bullies, so to speak. But every now and then, it's just something fun. I think I enjoy it. I think because honestly, this is getting really real. I think because I am just generally such a polite person that the same way like. British humor is always based on people being loud and saying things obnoxious that they would never say because they're also British. But I feel like sort of the same way, like it's fun for me to hear these stories about old Dirty Bastard and Rick James just being unhinged, like not caring at all. Maybe you know what I mean?
Rick James was a whole nother level of unhinged. Oh, listen. And James Brown was another one, especially with how they fire people.
Have you ever, you know, Nile Rodgers?
Yes, I know who now.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like I read his book, Le Freak, and that changed my. I mean, like, he's not by any means a bully, but like some of the things that he did to himself, you know, like the story in Miami waiting on Madonna, but he's got a shotgun in the closet. Like, there's a part of me that's like, this is just a good story. This is just a compelling protagonist. And there's a part of me that loves it. I mean, old Dirty Bastard. I mean, like, I never truly met the man, but there's a part of me that's really excited about it.
You never worked with Old Dirty Bastard?
I came within inches.
Okay, within inches.
So,
physically.
Inches might be a strong term. So I was, I went to Harvard. I was on the student council, and we had some money. We had some money to bring through an act. And that was, you know, in the 90s. And I was like, I want to bring Wu-Tang Clan and have them perform on Harvard Yard. And somehow I won that fight, and we got all the funds secured. And then the day of the event happened, and I've got the yard full of people. And timing matters here, because when I booked Wu-Tang, they were still underground hip-hop group. But in the months that followed between the booking and the show, like, you know, Method Man blew up as a single. You know, like things started to happen, like, you know, Protect Your Neck, you know, was re-released, I want to say. Wu-Tang Clan Ain't Nothing to Fuck With blew up. Like, by the time the show came, I had like a whole bunch of Harvard students and half of Boston on the yard waiting for these guys. And then I got a phone call about noon saying, hey, old Dirty Bastard got locked up. So we're not coming. He was like, I might be able to send you, like, I don't know which way. It was like, inspect a deck. It was like, you might get one member of the Wu. And I was like, that's not going to work, fellas. I was like, I got people here. They bought tickets. Like, we need the Wu. And the guy hung up on me, and I couldn't get him back. And I had to go in front of these people and say, okay, so, you know, thanks for coming out. We're going to get you guys some refunds because Wu-Tang is not, you know, going to be able to make it. But... we do have a local Harvard band named Spatula that's going to sing some songs for you. And we've got the comedic stylings of, I forget the guy's name. I don't want to mess it up. I'll say somebody who it was. It was not Matt Bacall, but it was like a Harvard student who told us he knew stand-up. I shouldn't say it's Matt Bacall because that's putting this on him. That's a real person. It was a Harvard student who said he was going to do some stand-up. And I kid you not, he got up there and did a Jerry Seinfeld routine. He did a Jerry Seinfeld.
Literally?
Like, and people were like, wait, he's doing the plane?
Yours.
He's doing the airplane food
he
thing?
He stole that.
And then Spatula got up there and sang. And people are leaving. People are angry. We're giving him refunds. I'll never forget this dude came up to me. Black dude. He was like, hey, yo, I'm friends with Ed OG and the Bulldogs. I can get him up here in about an hour. And I was like, I don't think, no disrespect. By the way, shout out to NOG and the Bulldogs. Be a Father to Your Child. Great song. It was not going to satisfy these, but it was still going to be a, you know, so our money had to go elsewhere that year. But yeah, because of old Dirty Bastard's legal concerns, which are legend, we were never able to make that
tragic
show happen.
Sorry, I'm we sorry never, for that missed opportunity.
No, that. But you know, I did finally see Old Dirty Bastard perform one time. I saw him perform in Atlanta at a place that's been long gone. It was over by the CNN Center called the World Club. And I mean, it's to this day possibly the greatest terrible performance I've ever seen. Old Dirty Bastard got up there. He did like two or three songs. He forgot so many lyrics. Like, he kept telling the DJ, I cut this off. Like, he'd start rawhide, you know, and then all of a sudden he'd be like, no, I don't want to sing this song. The crowd turned on him after about he did doing this like three or four times, like straight up started like booing and stuff.
Damn.
So he reached in his pocket and he pulls out what I believe was a starter gun. But you're in a hip hop club, it just looks like a gun.
Oh, damn.
And he fired it up into the air, like discharged it, and everybody ducked. And then he struck, I kid you not, the John Travolta pose from from Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever. Oh, God.
While everybody is still stunned that he just fired this gun in the club, and then he casually walked to the edge of the stage. He said, move. People parted like the sea. He jumped down off the stage and walked out through the back of the club, like walked out through the regular person's entrance / exit, and that was it. That was Old Dirty Bastard.
That is an exit.
I think it was actually 1995.
Wow, huh? Amazing.
Just walked out through the exit like nothing had happened. To this day, I was like, even within like 10 minutes of it happening, I was like, you know what? If you come to see an Old Dirty Bastard show, what he just did is actually better than him somehow like performing all his great songs. Like, it's like, no, it's an evening with Old Dirty Bastard. He's going to forget some lyrics. He's going to fire a gun and he's going to walk through the crowd and exit the theater. It was insane. Mm. I don't know if that was why we lost the World Club. It was a great club in Atlanta before we had MJQ and Club
Kaya. I love MJQ.
Listen, Atlanta's got some great, great clubs. I wish somebody put that together, put together a book where we can see all the great Atlanta clubs. But yeah, shout out to MJQ, Club Kaya, and all those places that we used to go to. I love Old Dirty Bastard. I think he was one of the most innovative rappers of all time. We're talking today about Fantasy with Mariah Carey, but like we're talking about the same guy who did Got Your Money, you know what I'm saying? Shimmy Shimmy Ya. Shimmy Shimmy Ya.
Shimmy Yam, Shimmy Ya. Give me the mic so I can take it away. Off on the natural charge, Bon Voyage. Yeah, from the home of the Dodgers, Brooklyn squad.
You know, nowadays we look at Old Dirty and we think, man, maybe we needed to be better friends. Maybe we needed to help this man. But what do you think about that? I mean, like, what do you think about Old Dirty's, you know, what made him great and, you know, what's his legacy in hip hop?
I think, in my mind, his legacy just being a human being is how many different dynamics there are, these different nuances to how our brains process things, the psychology behind things that we've experienced and how we cope with it.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and also just not having access to, you know, therapy.
Exactly.
During that time. This is not at a time where Black people are unpacking things. Let's unpack
that's
that.
So true.
You know,
it's the role of, like, you know, where was hip hop on mental illness? Well, I think that we definitely weren't talking about it back then. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the idea of a therapist. You know,
yeah,
we were still a little bit away from that.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, and you know, again, I think to a certain extent, you know, I just love a good story. I mean, the idea that this guy was a fugitive, but he was still showing up at concerts. You know, when they dropped the W in 2000, he was already on the run from, he had like literally run out of rehab. Like he was at a rehab in Pasadena, California. And they said, we got to take it down to the court. And dude just said, I'm not doing that. And ran away. And like, they said, well, we don't have, you know, this is not a rehab where we, you know, restrain anybody. Like he just literally ran away. And so for the next couple of months, he was showing up at concerts, showing up at record release albums. He doesn't get caught until he's in Philadelphia signing autographs at a McDonald's drive-thru. And they said that the crowd got so big with people coming up to get signatures from ODB that the cops didn't know who was over there causing a commotion. They just went over there because they were like, who are all these people hanging out at McDonald's drive-thru? When they figured out that he had bench warrants, that was when they took him back in. But I mean, like, to me, this is who Old Dirty Bastard was. Like,
just who he was.
And his cousin, the RZA, said, my cousin was a genius. He was like, Old Dirty Bastard was a genius. And then to a certain extent, I feel that way. I feel like he was untethered by social norms. And I'm not, obviously, he did some things that, you know, are not excusable or funny. But, you know, just from an artistic point of view, there's a part of me that respects that sort of wild man that he was. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do want to mention one more thing about Oh Dirty Bastard being on this cut. You know, Mariah, this is the first time Mariah really links up with, like, you know, just the most underground sort of, like, you know, to use my mom's name, roughneck rapper that she had worked. I mean, like, she goes on to work with Jay-Z.
Okay. Look. Alright, yeah. She wanna shop with Jay, play box with Jay. She wanna pillow fight in the middle of the night. She wanna drive my bands with
Bone Thugs and Gucci. Like, she works with everybody. But this was the first time we were like, wait, she's working with him?
Keeping it real, son.
That's right.
The shining star. You're my shining star, girl.
So where do we land after all this on Mariah Carey? Like, do we, you know, what do you as a performer, you know, take away from this artist and this time?
I think she's an artist to definitely study. Mm. from the ways in which she has honed her skills.
Yeah.
And not only the singing, in the writing as well. And also take a listen to Luther. To see where those worlds meet, because there are also other ways in which artists, like I said, influence and inspire each other.
I love how you are, you know, not afraid to champion yourself. I actually truly appreciate that, because I think sometimes, you know, we want credit for being, like, you know, humble and not sort of putting our names to the conversation on stuff. But quite frankly, there is so much music. There's so much TV. There's so much culture out there that sometimes if you're not actively out pushing yourself, like, it's really easy to get lost in the mix.
Absolutely.
That being said, who are, you know, they don't have to be, they could be current, they could be in the past. Who are, like, the three artists that, you know, you feel, I'm not even going to say inspire you, but, you know, make you like, oh yeah, you know, like, this is why I'm an artist. I want to make something that makes someone feel the way I feel when I listen to blank.
Okay, I can actually just give you my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore.
And it's of ladies, gentlemen, and then we have the personality and the foundation of which those things sit on. So on the ladies' side, we have Badu, Phyllis Hyman, Lisa Fisher, and Sarah Vaughan. And of course, I got to give an honorable mention to Jill Scott and Layla Hathaway.
Beautiful.
Then over here on the gentleman's side, we have B. Slay, formerly known as the gospel singer Tone. We have Rick James. We have Nate Dogg. And we have Luther.
Luther.
And then, of course, as an honorable mention over there, we have Philip Bailey of Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah.
And we have Crash Cut. Levon Bennett. If you don't know who that is, just go ahead and look him up.
All right. That's hilarious. Oh, nice.
It'll make sense.
Okay.
And then the personality side down here that those two things sit on, we have Little Richard, Bugs Bunny, Babs Bunny. We have Jim Carrey, specifically from Liar Liar, Ace Ventura, and The Mask.
Mm.
My parents took me to go see The Mask at the movie theater.
And who's, like, who's Babs Bunny?
Babs Bunny. Okay, so that's from Tiny Toons.
Yeah.
And so you got Busta and Babs Bunny. Those are the like the grandchildren, like, of just the new bunnies that are coming up. And Babs is me, and I am Babs.
Don't you give me those lies, Buster Bunny. If you think you're gonna charm your way out of it.
Because she's just one of those folks where it's like, she, like, for instance, there was an episode where a skit where she was sitting in the audience of a game show and they called her name. And so they said, "And coming to the stage, Babs Bunny." And she goes, ah! And she looks at the camera and says, "I'm excited." Like that.
Yes. Tiny Toons quietly turned on a lot of artists. I will never forget my favorite episode of the show. It was basically, they were lost on the Warner Brothers lot, but it was essentially a parody of Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
Like, because they couldn't find, I forget who was lost, but, like, I just remember at the time I had just seen Apocalypse Now, and I was watching this episode of Tiny Toon, and the fact that they knew about Apocalypse Now, I was like, whoa, these people are like on some different cartoon stuff.
Yeah.
Loved Babs.
Yeah, no, Babs.
Babs was great.
And then, of course, we step into this world. Mm. Ricky Smiley, Dave Chappelle, Arnaz J, Monique.
Of course.
Stephen Wright. Bo Burnham, Jamie Foxx.
There you go.
Like these are, I'm also inspired by comedians.
I was
going to
say, you have almost as many, if not more, comedy icons, right?
Yeah. So it's, I grew up on that.
You know, what's funny. There's actually some overlap in your list because when I was talking to Neil Brennan, he said, I knew Dave Chappelle was great because he seemed like Malcolm X and Bugs Bunny had a child. And I was like, yeah, I absolutely see that. That's the perfect. Whole way through. Before we let you go. Mm-hmm. I am dying to know, as somebody who, you know, is part of the absolute next wave of artists, what do you think about, you know, where hip hop and R&B are right now, you know, in this year right now? And let me give it some context because I feel like I've never been in a position where I was bored isn't the term, but just like I don't hear a whole lot that like I'm really excited about. Especially right now in hip hop, just being honest. And I feel like to a certain extent, the numbers are bearing it out. There's something like hip hop sales are down 40%. You see different numbers everywhere, but I feel like R&B is actually where the excitement is right now. And every time I look up, I feel like there are artists who they may not be. I mean, well, in some cases, I feel like the SZAs and the Summer Walkers and, you know, they're blowing up all the time, but I feel like you're part of a group, and I think it started with the internet. That was the first group where I was like, oh, there is an underground. There is an alternative to what I'm hearing on the radio and what's sort of being forced upon me. Like, I feel like you're a part of that. And I kind of want you to see, do you feel like you're a part of that? Are you just an artist who's going, doing his own thing, not worried about what everybody else is doing? Or do you feel like you're part of a generation that is doing exciting new music?
So, first and foremost, I'd like to say I sang background on Girl by the Internet. I was doing that like my first month or so of me moving to LA. Mm. So that was dope. So shout out to my homies.
And I feel like their legacy only increases every year that we go on because people go on and do other stuff. Like,
yeah, nah. Sid and Pat were doing production and writing on Renaissance, and I'm just
I don't think I knew that. That's
super, yeah. No, yeah. I'm super proud of them. Like, you know, just and they're able to just do their own thing. Mm. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm in an interesting space, I feel, because I'm a current artist, but a lot of my influence comes from the 70s and 80s. And, you know, there's a little bit more now that's bleeding into the performance aspect of it. And that's rock, you know, which I love. You know, I love Lenny Kravitz.
I feel more and more black people are getting into it.
We created it.
Of course. But then we moved on, as we sometimes do. We go in this direction, but then at some point we're like, hey, we created that.
That's why I'm doing a departure from a current sound. Still gradually incorporating like live drums and, you know, seeing how this feels, singing this way or singing over this type of, you know, like touching on that with the last project. But no, it's something that needs to be done.
I totally agree. And I think, look, we talked about Mariah doing sort of pop R&B and then becoming, you know, one of the people who was merging it with hip hop, where R&B goes next, none of us can say for sure, but I can say that this group of people here feel like you absolutely are part of that future. And we want to thank you for coming through today. So absolutely. Thank you so much, Duran.
Where can we find you on the internet? You got one of those.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Yeah. So you can find me on the TikToks and the Instagrams and the Twitters. Listen, your mama your mama named you Twitter, and that's what I'm gonna call you. So
yeah, if you say X, nobody
knows
what's
the handle.
Yep, Duran Bernard, D U R A N D B E R N A R R.
Luxury, help me in this thing.
All right, well, I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury. That's L-U-X-X-U-R-Y on the internet.
And I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes old dirty DJ, Diallo Riddle. You can find me at Diallo, D-I-A-L-L-O, on Instagram, or Diallo Riddle on TikTok.
And this is One Song. We will see you next time. This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson with engineering from Marcus Hom. Additional production support from Charles Childers, Alicia Shimada, and Jordan Colling. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Leslie Guam, and Eric Weil.
Hey guys, Sean Hayes here. Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, and I had a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sit down with not one, not two, but three presidents of the United States on our recent episode of Smartless. That's because President Biden, a returning guest, brought two of his favorite pals, former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, all joined us for unforgettable conversation. It's a historic episode of Smartless as we pry into the minds of these remarkable leaders. We'll cover everything from their time in office, America's responsibilities in the world, and their personal passions in an episode full of some candid stories, insightful perspectives, and a few surprises along the way. Whether you're a political junkie or just curious about the inner workings of the Oval Office, this episode is a must listen. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to hear from three of the most influential figures in recent American history. Follow Smartless on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to Smartless ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.